pastor's heart, and Dominic Steele today, and managing the relational complexities during a crisis. We're talking with Robert Creech. For 22 years, Robert was senior pastor of the University Baptist Church in Houston, in Texas, and now he serves as the director of pastoral ministries at the George W. Truett Theological Seminary in Texas. And really, he's become the go-to guy for thinking on family systems in congregational life. He was a guest here on the pastor's heart last year when he was out in Australia, but he's actually just been lecturing Australian pastors in a series through Sydney's Family Systems Institute, and there's been great feedback for those seminars. We come to Robert in a moment, but first, if you could help us out with the pastor's heart, either by becoming a Patreon subscriber — we're not yet all the way in underwriting our funding and growing this ministry — go to patreon.com/thepastor's heart. And if you were able to help us out by, I don't know, $5 or $10 a month, then that would just be wonderful. And look, tell a friend who might be helped by this ministry, and we would really appreciate your pastor partnership there. Now, Robert Creech, thanks for joining us. And I wonder, Robert, if we could start with the senior pastor's heart. And you've been pastoring pastors through this COVID season. What's your pulse check on what's going on in pastoral teams, both here in Australia and in America and all around the world, as you've checked in with people?
Yes. I think one of the things I have noticed is that once we received a shutdown notice and were told we weren't going to be able to meet publicly, that a lot of pastors kind of came out of the gate very fast, and there were a lot of decisions to be made in a short period of time. That wasn't just true of churches. We had to do that at the university and the seminary. People were doing it in every part of our cultural life, making decisions they never really had prepared to make in a short time. And pastors were doing that. And I think necessarily so. Most of them were sort of taking the situation in hand and deciding very quickly how to go online and what form that would take and what platforms they would use. I've just been seeing pastors having to make a lot of hard decisions, not a lot of feedback and reward from the ministry they felt called to do, and trying to find a way to stay faithful to the gospel and to their congregations and to their ministry in the middle of all that. So it's been a chaotic, somewhat chaotic situation.
And I'm getting a sense from some people about almost a fatigue of disappointment, of having made a plan, it not come to fruition, having to make another plan, it not come to fruition. And so just kind of an overwhelming sense of disappointment.
Yeah, and I think that's true beyond pastors. It's all of us. I read someone wrote today that said that the worst purchase they made last year was a year 2020 planner. Your plans have to have plans and contingencies and what if this and that. It's very frustrating and fatiguing, I think, not to have some sense of normal life that you can plan around. Instead, it's constantly responding to the newness of almost every week and the news. So that's a lot of stress on pastors.
What's your advice for senior pastors as we attempt to pastor our teams and help them spiritually, psychologically at this time?
Yeah, I would put this situation, Dominic, in the category of how we lead and minister during a period of crisis. One definition of a crisis is that it's a time when the future is unknown, the future is unpredictable. And we don't know what's around the next corner. And that's that way, you know, if a building burns down, that's a crisis. If we have a serious experience of, a church about 20 minutes from where I'm sitting right now, a couple of years ago, had a gunman come in on a Sunday morning, a little rural church, and kill 21 people in Sutherland Springs, Texas. That's a crisis when the future is called into question. And this is one of those crises, except that it's not a crisis that lasts for a few weeks and then it's over. It's what one of my friends called a chronic crisis. It's going to be with us for a while. And during a crisis, the thing that a leader can do with their staff team and with their congregation, one is to make sure that there's a plan in place that calms people down a good bit. Even if the plan has to be adjusted almost on a daily basis, at least letting them know, here's where we're going, here's what's next. communication becomes really important, more so than in a normal time. It's always important, but the volume on that needs to be turned way up during a crisis. People need to hear from their pastors. Staff teams need to hear from their senior pastor much more frequently, not just about the crisis. Just they need the voice of the shepherd. They need to know that you're there. And communication in all manner, personal, email, text, whatever versions we got available to us should be turned up, it seems like to me. It's also one of the things we can do for them is take care of ourselves, to have some sort of spiritual practices in place that we are living with and we keep up, because we don't do them any good by exhausting ourselves spiritually or emotionally, physically. Staying up with our reading, with the intellectual challenge, keeping our brain working so we can think. That's an important thing to do for others, not just for ourselves. Those are some of the things I think of that during a crisis people appreciate from a leader: a calm presence, a good communication, a sense of a plan, taking care of ourselves, and expressing the kind of pastoral care. Again, you do that all the time, but the volume needs to go up on that a bit during a time of crisis. There are people who are hurting. I don't know what in your congregations you, if you're dealing with this, but lots of job losses, lots of fear, lots of concerns about their children and going back to school. People have sources of anxiety all around them now that they didn't have a few months ago. And so knowing that, pastoral care becomes really important, and that includes care for our team and listening to them and finding out what they're up against and how they're struggling with this with their own families and their own lives.
Mm. I read an article by you where you said there's a temptation for us to, or what we need to do is, I read an article by you where you raised the issues of optimism and despair and really the choice is there and how hope is in the middle. Do you want to just elaborate on that?
Sure. I wish that were my original idea, but it comes from the theologian Jürgen Moltmann, who in Theology of Hope, he says there are two sins against hope. Presumption is one, a kind of unbased optimism. Everything's going to be fine. And then the other is despair. Nothing's going to be okay. We're never going to make it out of this. And neither one of those are Christian positions. Hope is this confidence about the future, because God is the God of hope. God is in the future. God stands in the future and speaks to us and promises and invites us to himself and says, it's okay to be where I am. And he's going to be in every one of our futures. And so it doesn't mean that things are going to be easy or even that everything's going to be okay. It means that we're going to be okay. That our God holds us in our hands, and hope lets us live that way. Hope is intended to be a very realistic thing, that we don't deny what's going on around us. We own it, but we learn to trust God in the middle of it, because he's promised another day. And that's a very helpful way of thinking for me, is to try to live in hope instead of optimism or giving up.
How does the Stockdale principle from Jim Collins and Good to Great fit into all of that and our current situation?
Yeah, it's exactly. You know, he interviewed James Stockdale, and Stockdale, he asked him, who were the prisoners of war in the Hanoi Hilton in the Vietnam War? Who were the prisoners who didn't make it out? And Stockdale's famously said it was the optimist. It was the ones who kept saying, we're going to be out of this by Easter or by Thanksgiving or by Christmas.
COVID's going to be over by October.
Yeah. And so they kept setting these optimistic, unfounded dates, and you keep passing those dates, and it's getting worse instead of better, and they gave up eventually. And what Stockdale said was we have to be realist. We can never give up our hope that God is with us, but we can't live with a kind of empty optimism either. And I think being realistic about what our circumstances are is a good way to settle down. As I said, we came out of the gate really fast and became fatigued, but we need to prepare, we pastors, for a marathon, not for a 100-meter dash. And be prepared to run this race for a long time if necessary.
Mm. So I mentioned to you online that I'd been arguing that we should be leading for endurance rather than leading for recovery. And I was going to ask you what you thought of that, but then I actually discovered that you'd actually written that thought before I'd made it in your point here.
Yeah, I think that's a thing to settle into and to say we may be at this for a long time. So what practices do I need to put in place in my life and make sure they stay in place? Spiritual practices, prayer and solitude and things that help me attend to God's presence and pay attention to God. What kind of practices do I need to put in place intellectually so that I keep reading, I keep growing as I would have intended to do in another time, not in a crisis. But again, that keeps our brains working and that has a way of calming us. It can also be, you know, a way of escaping reality, but that's not the purpose. The purpose is how do I keep learning and growing? What practices are going to help me with my relationships with my family and my coworkers, my extended family? I might want to be making more phone calls or more Zoom calls or something now than usual with friends because I'm not around human beings nearly as much as I'm used to being. And so maintaining myself relationally, maintaining ourselves physically, just being careful what we eat and how we exercise, those kind of things are as important now as they've ever been for our lives. Our health is one of the things that's at stake here. But one quick way to become fatigued is to just kind of let go of those practices that we know to be healthy for us in any of those areas, really. So I think that's one of the ways you manage leading by endurance, not just trying to solve a problem and then we've done with it and move on to the next thing. COVID's not going to let us do that, I don't think. So we need to be prepared for the long haul. I mean, I don't know if you saw in the news this week that Google has told its employees to plan to come back to work in July of 2021. That's not crazy thinking to me. It may be to some people. But they're working from home till then. And I think we don't know what's going to happen the States, right now here in the States, it's a mess. More than 1,000 people a day are dying. We're having in excess of 60,000 new cases a day. Texas is one of the places. It's been a hot spot. We're making a little bit of improvement, but still, it's not a good place right now as far as the disease is concerned. And to think that schools are going to open and we're not going to see any result of that, we are. University's going to reopen in a few weeks. We're going to see results from that. And we're going to be at this for a while. We don't have a vaccine. We don't have a cure. And it is human behavior that determines how it goes. And right now in America, human behavior is not cooperating really well. So that's the context in which we're serving God's church. And
over here in Australia, the virus levels are much lower than you've got in the United States. And
I think you've had, 300 deaths total? Something like that.
Is that right? Yeah.
And and we've had 162,000.
Yeah. Yeah. It is extraordinarily different. I mean, and even if you just think your state, Texas, which is about the same population as Australia, you're in a much worse position than we are. But here, we've got the situation, well, in our little part, in New South Wales and Sydney, we've got, perhaps 12, 13 community transmission cases a day for the last 2 weeks. So there's a manageable level of anxiety in the community and a manageable level of health risk in the community. There is a risk, and the health department needs to be on contact tracing, but it's actually manageable. And so churches like ours are able to open up for meetings of up to 100 on site at the moment. And we're facing the issue of some people being in high-risk groups, so wanting to stay home, some people perhaps being a little cavalier about the whole thing, and then in the middle, a group of people who, if we can provide reassurance that it's physically safe, they might be prepared to come to church. How do you, actually there's an anxiety issue going on there for some of them, and also a balancing of the spiritual risk of staying away versus the health risk of coming close. How do you speak into that context?
I think this is one of those times where the apostles' words of being all things to all people may have a good application, is we've got a variety of people with a variety of needs in our congregations that we need to address. Those who don't feel comfortable coming back to a public gathering right now do not need to be shamed, or they need to be ministered to. And so we want to not only provide a way for them to worship with us, but we also want to provide adequate pastoral care and contact and let them know they're still part of who we are. Those that feel, you know, comfortable gathering, and there are safe ways of doing that with the kind of numbers you're talking about. And it's wonderful that you're able to provide opportunities for that. But I do think for some time we're going to need to provide options for people. I speak for myself, is that I haven't been to a public worship service since the 1st of March. Now, I attend three different services on Sunday. I just finished one in Anchorage, Alaska, where my daughter lives. And so we go to church with her in Anchorage, Alaska on Sunday morning, along with a church nearby in San Antonio and a church in Waco. They have different times, and so we just join them. It's not ideal, but I'm personally, in our context, I'm 68 years old. I'm really not comfortable returning to a public gathering in our context. Mm. And I know there are people like myself. So I think we have to not judge either, but be able to minister to those folk and make sure that nobody feels left out or not included. And fortunately, technology like this has allowed us to do things that we wouldn't have been able to do otherwise. There was a story here this past week in the news of a church that was trying to open up despite government regulations, and one person transmitted the disease to 100 people. And so that's where we are. And again, every context is going to be very different. And so you got to figure that out, I guess. But I do think for the foreseeable future, we're going to need to minister to people who are either high risk or still not comfortable returning, and make sure they don't suffer spiritually any more than they have to, that they still hear from their pastors, they hear from their small group leaders, they have access to worship. It's extra demand on us. Yeah.
How have you seen staff teams, emotional immaturity manifest itself during this COVID crisis?
Yeah. I'm aware of one situation where these were pre-existing conditions. I'll say that. COVID didn't cause it. But it has been an explosion of relational difficulties within a fairly large congregation. And the pastor's marriage has been impacted by it, and it's affected staff relationships. And my systems thinking about such as that would say that the anxiety of the time had its part to play in that coming to a head during this time, which has just made it worse for the congregation in many ways, because they're dealing here with the COVID thing, they're dealing with their own unemployment issues, they're dealing with their own children in school, and now they have to be concerned about what's going on with their church and their pastor and their staff. The way that Family Systems helps me think about this is that Murray Bowen, who developed the systems theory, said that human beings only have four automatic responses to rising anxiety. Now, they take a lot of forms, but they're really just four. We become more conflictual, or we withdraw and become more distant, or we turn to, some of us, he called overfunction, and some underfunction. Some become overly responsible and think for other people and tell them what to do and take on their responsibilities, and others let them, which is becoming underfunctioning or under-responsible, irresponsible, and not doing what, you know, holding up one's own part in the family or in the system. And then the fourth thing is, we call it projection, but we blame, we gossip, we point fingers, we want to find somebody to accuse of, you know, to be blamed for what's going on. That's all that we know how to do automatically. Now, we're not required to do any of those things, but running on automatic, that's what we will do as anxiety rises. And the level of those things, the level of the conflict, the degree of the distancing, will probably be in line with the level of the anxiety. And this is pretty highly anxious time right now. And so it wouldn't be surprising to find church staffs or church congregations a little more conflictual than usual, or some withdrawing and not be as engaged as usual, not some becoming more irresponsible, not living up to their responsibilities as staff members or as church leaders, some kind of trying to take over and run the thing and when it's not their job to do so. It would be surprising to see increased levels of gossip and blaming and finger pointing. Those kind of things would be normal, automatic human responses in a time like this. So it helps a lot if knowing that, we can maybe cut people a little bit of slack, show some grace, recognize that these are not the best times when our best versions of ourselves are always accessible. But church staffs during this time would probably be pretty anxious people, and therefore their behavior would tend to fall into some of those kind of patterns that Owen identified. So if you're a senior pastor and you know that, you can show a little more grace, but you can be looking for those things, and you can work on being a calmer presence with them. But you do that by working on yourself, by managing your own anxiety. You don't just pretend to be calm. You manage your own anxiety, and then you're better able to help others in your presence not be so anxious. Right. If any one of them on that staff team would just pause and do that and begin to take responsibility for themselves and stay in good contact with the others, I'm not saying the problems would all go away, but they would certainly be mitigated to some degree. And but when we're always just reacting to each other, then we contribute those reactions. Conflict generates, makes us more anxious. People withdrawing from us makes us more anxious. These automatic reactions contribute to the level of anxiety present. They don't diminish it. There are automatic responses, and then it becomes a spiral upward. And so when one person in that system who's an important part of it can work on managing their reactivity, they can be something of a kind of a step-down transformer, so that the current that's running through that system, when it comes to them, drops down a notch or two rather than spikes up a notch or two. Does that make sense? The other day I was telling the story of a friend of mine who is, she's a pilot for Southwest Airlines in the United States. Her name is Tammy Jo Schultz. She is a devout Christian, and she was in the church that I was serving as interim pastor when we met. She is the pilot who about a year and a half, 2 years ago, was flying from New York through Dallas on the way to San Francisco, and had an engine explode, and a passenger, because of the air pressure, sucked out a window. And she landed the plane safely in Philadelphia. And she's, it's a remarkable story of a calm leader in a crisis. One of the things she's since written a book called Nerves of Steel, and her telling her story. But one of the things she said she learned in her Navy training, her aviation training, was that in a crisis, you have to do three things. Is one, you have to aviate. And that is, you've got to get this plane under control. And she managed that. Then you have to navigate. You got to know where you're going next. And then the third thing is you communicate. And I thought that was a pretty good way of describing leadership during a crisis. Is initially, you got to get the thing under control. So there are a lot of decisions to be made fast in a crisis. but then a plan and to navigate where are we going next and how are we going to get there, and then being able to communicate with all the important people in that system so that they know there is a leader present and that there is a plan. And one of the most important things she said was when she, having done the first two, spoke to the people in the cabin that were panicking, and she, the passenger cabin, and she said to them, "We're not going to crash. We're going to take this plane and land in Philadelphia." And the flight attendants in the cabin said that the whole tone and tenor of the place changed in that moment. Her calm voice saying, "This is under control. We're going somewhere. We have a plan." And and she wasn't just blowing smoke. She knew she could do this. But it's a remarkable story of calm leadership. And I think that's the case. You don't have to be in the first chair, the senior pastor, to have that kind of influence. If you're an important part of a system, you can have an impact on that system's well-being.
I've noticed that actually in our congregation, as I came out in our church context and said, we're leading for endurance, we're not leading for recovery, and part of leading for endurance is we're going to have an online campus and a physical campus, and you're going to be able to oscillate between them as you feel comfortable. I could feel the tension go down as people say, "Oh, okay, they've got a plan, it's going to work, I can see how I fit into it for the next 18 months, It has been a tone change in our church the last few weeks as we've rolled that out.
And I think one of the things about communicating like that is in a regular time, people are more open to hear things, and so you don't have to say it as many times. But during a crisis when anxiety is high, we have to say things more frequently and in more different ways than we ordinarily do before everybody or most people have heard what it is that we're doing. And there's another element here, I think, in crisis leadership that's important, is that the decisions we make, the plans we draw up, if we're able to connect those plans and those decisions to our mission as a church and our vision, our sense of values, to be able to say to our congregation and to our staff teams, this is how a church that has this mission and this vision and this set of values, this is how a church like that behaves in a time like this, so that our decisions are tied to who we most deeply believe ourselves to be, rather than just being kind of off-the-cuff decisions or copying someone else's decisions. They come out of who we are. For individuals, Bowen would call that differentiation of self, this sense of I know what I believe and I know who I am, and I'm going to live out of that best I can, even when anxiety is high. Nobody pulls that off entirely, but that's the goal, is that we have a deep sense of what we believe and who we are, and we live out of that faithfully. And for churches to be able to do that is, I think, a reasonable thing to ask, is... Mm-hmm. That we make our decisions and be able to say, the reason we decided to have an on-campus meeting and a virtual meeting is because we value community, and some of you can't be with us. You know, be able to tie those decisions to our values. I think that helps people see that we're not just making up stuff. We're trying to figure out how someone like our congregation, a congregation like ours, navigates its way through a time like this.
Where have you seen pastors make mistakes and make the whole thing worse in the last little while?
Yeah. There's an image I use of pastors often. I don't know where I first heard it. I didn't make it up. But that pastors are often like stray dogs at a Whistler's contest. And one of the things that, and again, in our context, it's been this way, is almost every pastor had people, if the church was of any size, so that there was some diversity in it, they had people who were pushing to open and people that were pushing to stay closed. And they were just being tugged back and forth. And I think one of the things that pastors, mistakes that they made, is yielding to the pressure of one or the other of those rather than making a solid decision. I think an ideal you know, in a church like I had been pastor of for 23 years, we had a lot of professional people in our church. I think what I've thought about, what would I have done? And I think one of the things I would have done is I would have very quickly called together a team of people who had medical expertise and some other areas of expertise maybe, and said, and let the church affirm them and say, this is the group that's going to be processing data and helping us make good decisions about this. And we're going to do it on the basis of science and medicine and public health, as well as on the basis of, you know, our theology and who we are as the people of God. And I think that having a group like that that would then communicate regularly with the church and say, these are the things we're decided, these are the things we're working with, so that they know that it's being handled well. To do it on one's own, or just have to expect a church staff team to know how to do this by themselves, I think is, you know, unrealistic. I mean, what training have any church staff teams that you've known had to know how to navigate a public health crisis and being in the church in the middle of it? I don't know any church staff teams like that.
Another thing they didn't teach me in New Testament 1.
Exactly. You know, we joke about that all the time, about what we didn't learn in seminary. Well, there's stuff you can't learn in seminary. Nobody saw this one coming. Nobody signed up for this.
Hmm. Robert Creech, thanks very much for talking to us this afternoon.
It's a privilege to see you again and to talk with you. And I do want to say to the pastors that listen in here that I admire very much what you're doing during this very, very difficult time. And I admire what you're doing and just want to encourage you to keep it up for the long term.
My guest on The Pastor's Heart, Dr. Robert Creech, and Robert, of course, serves as the Director of Pastoral Ministries at the George W. Truett Theological Seminary in Texas. You've been with us on The Pastor's Heart, and we'll look forward to your company next Tuesday afternoon.
Hey, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, we would love it if you could hop over to the Apple Podcasts app and give us a rating and review. That helps us in the rankings and lets other people discover The Pastor's Heart. And again, if you are able to help us out by being a financial partner, go to our Patreon link, patreon.com/thepastorsheart.